Hello, everyone. Welcome back to an episode of Room 1710. I'm your host, Jarvis Owens, and today I have a special guest. Today I have Jeremy Jensen. Jeremy Jensen is the CEO and founder of Encore Search Partners. Encore Search Partners is Houston's largest privately held executive search firm. They have been number one for 3 years in a row, and it's six-time award-winning as one of the best places to work. It's currently valued over $10 million and looks to expand over the next coming years. How you doing, Jeremy Jensen?
Thanks for having me, man. This is a cool podcast studio, dude. I haven't been in a studio that's like this, and so, you know, I'm excited to see the professional production for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about this. I like this. So, let's just get started.
Well, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about business? You want to talk about social? You want to talk about dating, success, failure, regret? What do you want to talk about, Jarvis?
All of that.
Huh?
All of that.
Come on, man. We got 42 minutes. Give me some good stuff to lean in on, bud.
Well, I mean, let's get started with you, right?
Okay.
So you have Houston's largest privately held, held executive firm, right?
Yep.
And when you first started, you had no experience when it came to being a recruiter.
Uh-huh.
So how did you become from being like having no experience to being number one?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know, man. I feel like I tell that story all the time. I kind of want to get into the good stuff.
Okay.
So basically, when I was 25 years old, I was engaged to a beautiful woman. She was a six-figure earner. She came from a good family. Daddy was an Army veteran, a command sergeant major, as a matter of fact. Her mom was a registered nurse, and she grew up in Savannah, Georgia, and so she was well-educated. She had a great career, and she had a six-figure base salary whenever I was 24, 25 years old that provided that financial stability, right? Mm-hmm. And so she actually encouraged me to start my first company whenever I was 25, right? Because she could hold it down financially, right? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Absolutely. And she believed in my ambition and she believed in my talent. So the first company that I started was an email marketing business. Okay. It was called Market Share Solutions. Companies would basically hire me to generate leads, right? Much like, you know, the podcast studio here needs to generate some leads so we can get some more podcasts recorded in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I did that for about 3 years, man. And I took a look at my client base and I noticed, shit, man, half of my clients are staffing in recruiting companies. Uh-huh. Even though I'm making $200,000, $250,000, I'm only charging them $5,000 a month. But they're making $50,000, $80,000, $100,000 a month. And so in 2013, I decided, you know what? I'm in the wrong business. And so I shut down the email marketing company, and I started a recruiting company in January of 2013. But my superpower was one of the hardest things to do in my business, and it's generate clients, right? Okay. So that's why we've become number one in Houston over the last 11 years, is because I didn't pretend like I was the best recruiter in the business.
Yeah.
I leaned into what I knew, and what I knew was how to land new clients.
Okay. And speaking into leaning, you leaned against the grain.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was some of the advantages, or like, what did you see? What was like, you know, everybody has that straight line of what they have, their formula of what success is. Mm-hmm. But you saw something different. You had the competitive edge. So
many of my competitors, and I just got off a phone call today with somebody that wanted to come work for me. Mm-hmm. They believe in relationship development, right? They believe that you've got to take your clients to lunch. You've got to go golfing with them. You've got to, you know, go to their kids' bat mitzvahs.
Yeah.
And they believe that that's the way that you breed, you know, loyal clients. And I'm not going to disagree that that model is an effective model in business, right?
Right.
But the challenge in that business model is that there's only a finite number of hours in the day. And if you're taking your clients to lunch, you're going golfing with them, right? Mm-hmm. You check in on them every other day. How many clients can you effectively have? 20? 50? Right? And so the way that I went against the grain was I leveraged my email marketing experience and said, hey, look, it's not about relationship. It's about showcasing my accuracy, my technical competency, right? And how can I get my message in front of tens of thousands of people? Absolutely. And then that way, even if I only capture 1% of who I'm reaching out to, that's hundreds of clients, right? And so taking a little bit more, not necessarily a shotgun approach, because, you know, we were a little bit more calculated with the individuals we went after, whether it's people in the chemicals manufacturing space or the plastics manufacturing space, two industries that I saw were hiring. But going on a national basis and saying, hey, I'm willing to sacrifice personal relationship by, you know, just hitting the right place, right time. Maybe they're frustrated with their current vendor, right? And so that's whenever I found the benefit of digital marketing, right? Because I had been email marketing 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, right? In 2016, I started to see some of the email marketing reply rates go from 16% to 8%. To 4%. Why? Because shit, we started getting fucking spammed by everybody and their mom, right? So today it's funny that even whenever we do an email blast, my response rate is sub 1%, right? Okay. And so that's whenever in 2014, I decided I'm going to start doing content marketing on social media, right? Okay. Because you still get the impressions. Right. I did a post yesterday. I got 44,000 views on it. Right. You still get the impressions. People see the brand. They see my face. They see my lifestyle. Right. But it's not necessarily a relationship game because I don't need to take them to dinner. I don't need to explain what I do.
Yeah.
Right. And by the time that they engage on the content that I produce, they've already manufactured in their head that they're ready to buy what I'm selling. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, yeah. It's just a one-time thing. You upload this content and millions of, or 47,000 people feel like they already know you. They're all ready to buy.
Bro, I'm telling you right now that when you first start creating content and you're in the evolution of your content creation business, you know, you might only get 200 views. And then the next one you get 400. Yeah. And then the next one you get 500. And maybe the next one you get 300. And you wonder, why didn't that one trend like the last two have been trending? Mm-hmm. And if you're self-aware, right? If you're good at data analysis and you look at the abandonment rates and things of that nature, you figure it out. Hey, they don't like it whenever I maybe have headphones on. They don't like it whenever I'm wearing a green shirt. I need to wear a black shirt. They don't like it whenever I'm in a podcast studio that doesn't have decoration and color behind me. And when you reverse engineer what it is that your audience really wants to resonate with, then you can start leaning in and producing more of what they want to see.
And how did you get the knowledge of that marketing? Is it just something that you just kind of learned as you go, or has your past experience taught you something?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm the kid that, if you ever seen Good Will Hunting, that movie with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Great movie.
So I'm like Matt Damon, just an FYI. So I grew up in A-Leaf, single mom. She had me at 16.
Yeah.
Yep. And went to Kilo Middle School, Owens Intermediate School before that. But But the point that I'm trying to make is I was a straight A student all the way through school. Perfect score on my tax test. Do you have a
photographic memory?
I don't necessarily have a photographic memory, but I have the ability to identify patterns, right? And so I can see that if I produce this and this is the outcome, I have the ability to reverse engineer the why behind the what, right? Okay. And when you have the ability to identify patterns, then you can be very specific about, you know, leaning more into what you know your audience is going to resonate with. And so the reason why I brought up school is I've never made less than a 100 on a math test in my entire life.
Are you serious?
Right? Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And it's funny because I would say that I haven't even read a book from cover to cover ever since I was like in the 10th grade because I'm super ADD.
Yeah.
My head hurts whenever I am still and I'm staring at, you know, pages, words on a page. And so I think that's a big reason of why social media kind of resonates with me is I have such a short attention span, right?
Yeah.
To where you can just abandon it right away. Or if you're watching a visual media, it keeps you engaged through the different dynamics and colors and things of that nature, yeah. right? And so I think social media has been a part of my life, like I said, ever since 2014. I really leaned into LinkedIn. You know, being married for 10 years, I wasn't on Instagram, right? I wasn't even really on Facebook. Any good relationship partner is not on social media whenever he's in a happy relationship.
Unless they're entrepreneur, right?
You know, LinkedIn. This. LinkedIn is different, right? I don't think anyone's sliding into any DMs on LinkedIn. But
yeah.
But with that being said, really understanding how the algorithms work, understanding what type of behavior your audience creates based on the type of content that you produced, and kind of constantly A/B tested what things did, right? And so, you know, built a nice organic following through even marketing automation tools and things of that nature. And one of the things that I quickly found out is I have a big ego, I think like a lot of men do.
Yeah.
But I started to really feel complimented whenever I would walk into a trade association or a networking group and people would be like, oh, you're Jeremy. You're Jeremy Jensen. I follow you. I saw your content. I saw your post, right? And so whenever I started getting more of that affirmation, that's whenever I said, man, I'm going to start doing more of that for sure.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned ego.
Yeah.
So I know ego can hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
When's the time like that your ego has kind of really helped you?
Oh, interesting. Ooh. I mean, I could tell you countless times that it's hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the time where my ego in particular has helped me
in a healthy way, I guess,
was, you know, I have 40 employees that work for me. I think we might be at 41 right now. And a lot of the content that I produce specifically on Instagram, so I use the two platforms, like LinkedIn helps bring me clients and Instagram helps bring me people that want to work for me.
Okay.
And so a lot of people don't fuck with my LinkedIn or with my Instagram content because they think that I'm braggy, right? I'm a show off, I'm cocky, right? And so when you watch the videos where I talk about like, if you're a grown ass man and you make less than 150 grand a year, you need to fucking man up and show the fuck up, dude.
I saw that.
You know, and it's like, it's one of those situations where I'm going to piss off a lot of people, but how many people that stick around with that content that really resonate with it, right? And and I'll say that like Andrew Tate is like the definition of ego, like 100X.
Yeah.
And by it, no means am I any Andrew Tate, nor do I even want to be.
Yeah.
But with that being said, the people that like his content really fuck with it, right? And so by me showcasing the cars, the houses, the parties, the fun, the people, my social circle of the people that I hang out with that own $1 million cars, right?
Yeah.
That own $100 million companies. When you start to associate with those people, it creates an element of credibility for your brand to where people go, you know what? Maybe Jeremy can get away with talking a little bit of shit, you know, because he fucking earned it, right? He got there. He wasn't a crypto millionaire,
yeah,
right? He didn't have to fuck people over in order to make his money. He started in 2010, and it took 14 motherfucking years to get to the point where he's at. So if I start today, how old are you, 26, 20?
No, I wish. I'm 37.
You're 37. Yeah, My point is, if you start, man, you look so fucking good, dude. Black don't crack.
Unless you do crack.
The point that I'm making is if you start today, bro, where are you going to be in 14 years?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, 50 years old is not an old man, you know, especially because I saw some dude who is a famous actor. I saw him on social media the other day, 78 years old. That motherfucker looked like he was 45, dude.
Oh, wow.
I'm telling you, man, people... Yeah. Don't even start to even achieve their full potential, I feel like, until they get into their 40s these days.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like, I was at an exotic car meet on Sunday, and one of my buddies, he's 29 years old, and he owns an exotic car rental business, right? And so he's around multimillionaires all day.
Mm-hmm.
And in his fleet, he has 66 exotic cars, but he only owns 16 of them, okay? The other ones are ones that he borrows from other people that are leasing it into the program, like a timeshare.
Yeah.
And so he owns 16 exotic cars. Let's say the average one's worth $200,000, right? A bunch of Lambos. That's $3.2 million in worth of those vehicles. But in order to acquire it, he had to use leverage, put money down, and get a loan. And so in his mind, oh my God, I'm $2.5 million in debt because I have a depreciating asset and I still owe a principal on this exotic car. Mm-hmm. So he's sitting here looking at guys like me thinking he's failing, you know?
Yeah.
And he's trying to keep up with us with our Patek Philippe's and our Ferraris and our fucking Rolls Royces. Yeah. And he said, man, I just feel like I'm behind.
Yeah.
And I had to remind him, I said, PJ, you're 29 years old, bro. I didn't even buy my first Rolex until I was 32. Right?
Pretty good.
I didn't even own more than one house until I was 34. Right? And I think one of the challenges that we face in today's social media society is we're constantly comparing ourselves to the others that we hang out with.
Yeah.
Right? You might be upset because your boy is more fit than you.
Yeah.
You might be upset that another dude has a better hairline than you. What the fuck? Oh, what's going on with my shit? Yeah. Right? Yeah. And what we need to do is give ourselves a little bit of grace.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where are we at today versus where we were 2 years ago? Yeah. I bet if you were to compare, yeah, you'd be wildly impressed with where you've come from.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have to reflect on that all the time. Mm-hmm. And speaking of comparing, right? So I just did my research on you. I know that, you know, as a kid, you know, you bounced from place to place. And then you had a group of people. You felt a little, I guess you could say, insecure because you didn't have what they had.
100%.
You were different. But now growing up, and that kind of gave you a little bit of competitive edge now. But also now you're still different, mm-hmm, and you lean towards that competitive edge. So I guess why does that, like, being different just bring immense value?
Yeah. Now?
Like, and do you still kind of have that insecurity of just like, or maybe imposter syndrome that you feel like you don't belong?
Yeah. No, I'm going to be honest. Yes, I do sometimes. Yeah. Right. And so what you're referencing, Jarvis, is when I was a little kid, I was raised by a single mom.
Correct.
And she had me at 16. She was a high school dropout. And so to put that into perspective, when I was in high school, mm-hmm, my mom was 30 years old, right? So when she was your age, right, I was, 20. I mean, you 16, 19. 21 years old, yeah, you know, 19, 20. 21 years old when she was 37.
Wow.
And so really she was a little bit more like my big sister than my mom, to be quite honest. And so she was trying to make ends meet, you know, single mom. I had a little brother, he's 7 years younger, and we were constantly being evicted home to home to home. Right. And so it actually helped my social skill development because I was showing up to new schools where I didn't know anyone.
Correct.
And so I had to make friends very quickly. I played football and I was an academic nerd. So I had two different pools in order to make.
What position did you play?
I played fullback. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But in middle school, I played outside linebacker, but then I played fullback in high school. But I didn't like getting hit as a linebacker. And that's a bad position to be in because you better be okay with doing the fucking hitting, right?
Yeah.
Like, but anyways, long story short is we grew up in the ghetto, bro. And I remember getting jumped. I remember getting robbed for my shoes, for my bike, you know, fucking white kid in an 85% black community.
Yeah.
But with that being said, she moved me to the apartment complex in a nice neighborhood finally, right? She'd gotten a little bit older. She'd gotten a little bit more financial stability. Well, when you live in an apartment that your mom's paying $700 a month for, but all your friends around you are living in million-dollar houses and driving brand new F-150s.
Yeah.
That does breed a little bit of jealousy.
Yeah.
Insecurity, envy, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where that kind of chip on my shoulder came from. And so you fast forward 25 years and you say, hey, that 40-year-old man right there shows the fuck off. The houses, the cars, the watches, the parties. It really did start whenever I lived in that little one bedroom apartment with my mom and little brother, right? Mm-hmm. Because now I want the population to know
you have
I'm the motherfucking man.
Yeah.
But the challenge is when you have it like that, you start get invited into new rooms, right? The neighborhood that I live in, my house is a $2 million house. The average home value in my neighborhood, 3.5.
right? So I'm getting invited to their dinner parties. Mm-hmm. I'm getting invited to the social clubs, the galas, right? And so as you advance in your social circle, what you should be doing is elevating the people that you surround yourself with. Because if you're number one in your motherfucking friend group, I promise you, you're in the wrong group.
Really?
Okay? You're in the wrong group. Because you need to be around people that are constantly motivating you in the area where you need to be motivated, right? Yeah. For some people, it's their career. For others, it might be their fitness. For others, it might be their fashion or their creativity, right? And so when you're in those rooms, one thing that I needed to remind myself is these fucking dudes that are fucking with me, that are inviting me to the parties, they don't give a fuck that I have money. They have money.
Yeah.
You know what they wish they had more of, Jarvis?
Friends, happiness.
Vulnerability. Okay. Authenticity. The confidence to be the real them. You know why they can't do that? Because their parents are 100 million. They might be 20 million, but their parents are 100 million. So they can't come on a fucking podcast. They can't drop F-bombs. They can't tell their honest opinion, go on Nightcap with fucking Carolina Sanchez and talk about dating, right?
Yeah.
So when they see me do it, there's two camps. They either hate me, probably because they're jealous, or the more common, they kind of like me. They're like, Jeremy, you're all right. You might not be on our level yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we like that you're always the same person, whether you're showing up to the gala, whether you're showing up to the car show, or whether you're showing up to the dating podcast. You're always the same fucking person. And so it's that authenticity that I needed to recognize, that my real friends, my real followers, the people that don't mute, the people that don't unfollow, they want to see the real you.
Okay. And are you still, with you being surrounded by these people who, like you said, $20 million a year, are you still feeling some of that insecurity, like you're trying to get to that level, or have you moved past that to where it's just, it doesn't really matter? Like, you want to get to that level, yeah, but that's not the reason.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I will say that there is no jealous insecurity or envy with people just because of their net worth or their personal income.
Okay.
Right. If anything, if I look at an individual that's self-made, nine-figure guy, right? I want to be around him because I want to learn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How did he do it? Did he do it through channel partnerships? Did he do it by employing W-2 employees? Did he do it by creating a technology stack that he was able to commercialize and sell to Amazon for nine figures? I genuinely want to know how these individuals go from 10 million net worth to 100, because, yeah, of course I want to do that.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily because I want my kids to drive Rolls Royces when they turn 16, but I think that as men, we want to feel like we're winning, right?
Yeah.
And when you're in a position to where you can functionally buy anything that you want, the only way that you can say that you're winning is if you're advancing each and every year, right?
Yeah.
And so I think one time, I hate to say it, but this is a Trump quote, but, or no, it might have, no, it was a Trump quote. He said that money is not important. He said, all money is a scoreboard of life. Right. And so to some extent, I do agree with that. Now, with that being said, I've met a lot of fucking cool ass people mm-hmm. that don't make a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And I've met a lot of fucking assholes that make a lot of fucking money. And so the people who I respect and admire are not assholes. They're really fucking cool, and they have more of what I want more of in life.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's kind of change subjects and kind of go back sure. really just to when you were a child, right? What was?
Oh man, this is a therapy session?
No, no.
Are you
going to no.
bill me $225 an hour, Jarvis?
No, I promise you. We're going to go to dating too. Because I do have questions. Because are you single?
Yeah, single as okay. fuck, dude.
So being single in Houston,
yeah.
I know the battle you're going through.
Battle? It's rough. Well, I don't have the same problems as you.
Okay. Well, speak on that then.
I don't know. Here's the point.
How is your dating life? Let's start right there.
So there's a song by Post Malone. It's called The Wrong Ones. He collaborated with Tim McGraw. And one of the lines is, he said, I'm out here looking for the right one, mm-hmm. but the wrong ones keep looking at me. And I can resonate with that, right? And first of all, I fuck with Post Malone. Oh, yeah. Post Malone got me through my separation in 2018, and he got me through my divorce. And I'll tell you that if you go back and listen to his old shit, man.
What album?
All of them, bro. Okay. All of them. Okay. All the way back to Stony. Everything, okay. Man. I fuck so hard with Post Malone. Yeah, and I'm glad that even battling through his depression and his addiction, that he's been able to reinvent himself, surround himself with a new batch of people that motivate and inspire him to create the shit that he wanted to create when he was in high school. Now Post Malone's doing fucking country, and it fucks, just an FYI. Yeah. But I'm out here looking for the right one. Mm-hmm. But these wrong ones keep looking at me. So in the age of social media, I feel like every motherfucking single woman that has an Instagram wants a dude to take her out to fucking Toca Madera, fucking Sophie, fucking Marmo, Lombardi, Segreto, CL, Steak 48. And in order to get a date, you've got to have the capability to fucking show out. You know why? Not because she really fucks with you, because she wants to post it to make her friends jealous, right? Mm. Hey, did you get the VIP invite to Plume last week? Oh my God, take me, right? And what I've realized is, by going through that rat race, that fucking hamster fucking wheel of trying to entertain these women and have it go absolutely nowhere because they have absolutely zero interest in trying to date you. They just want to take from you, right?
Absolutely.
That's whenever I've come up to with the epiphany that, you know what? I'm just going to like go out with my bros, number one. So like last night I was at Mastro's, right?
Okay. Yes, yes.
We played credit card roulette. We dropped $1,200 fucking tab. You know what I'm saying? But I don't mind that when you're with the bros. And then with the girls, what do I want to do? Let's go play pickleball. Let's go for a walk at Memorial Park, right? Let's hang out by the pool and let's chat.
Those are actually
and
really
if
good
a girl says, no, I want you to take me to Steak 48 immediately, I have no interest, right? And so I've gotten good at creating my own boundaries and recognizing the difference between a girl that actually wants to get to know you or that girl that just wants you to take the picture so she can post, right? And those are two very different types. But when I told you that, it's the right one is the girl who is emotionally intelligent, who's kind, who's nurturing and attentive, who's a great communicator, who is confident on camera.
Why do you say that?
Because that's I think that's what I want more of in life, right? I want to be a Houston socialite.
Okay.
I want to be, right? So the girls who I have a crush on right now are media personalities, right? It's people that have incredible vocabularies. They don't need to prep before interviews. And it's like, you know what? That's my babe right there, you know? But with that being said, there's no shortage of girls, the wrong ones that look amazing. Oh my God, they're so gorgeous.
And there's a lot here.
But they just want the Amex, you know? And I learned something from one of my buddies. His name is Chris. I'll leave his last name out of it. But Chris once taught me, he said, Jeremy, you're playing a losing game. These girls have no interest in how much money you have. The only thing they fucking care about is how much money you're willing to spend on them. And it doesn't matter if I make $2 or $3 million a year net, right? If the dude that makes 500 grand spends every motherfucking dollar on that girl trying to fucking entertain her, that's the guy who the wrong one is going to pick every day of the week.
What about successful women? Have you met someone who's on your level? How do you vet them? Or are they saying the same thing that...
Yeah.
You know, they want it. They want you to take them out. Are those very successful women saying the same thing? Or
that's a good question.
Certain women?
Remember what I told you, that you're attracted to what you want more of in life?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So I have a very successful business, right? It took me a long time to get to where I am and to have the consistent repeat business pipeline from clients that use us because of our technical competency, right? To where what I'm attracted to is not financial success. Okay. Right. And so to be quite honest, I don't ask out the financially successful women, though I like one of my best friends is a very successful 8-figure net worth individual in her mid 30s. I think generally speaking, it's because typically they are busy, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to have the ability to text my girl and be like, hey, we were invited to dinner with XYZ tonight. Right. Let's go.
You want availability.
Or, hey, we've got this gala. Get dressed up. Go get a dress. Oh, we've got this. You know, my ex-wife makes almost $500,000 a year. She's very successful at BP, right? Chemical and biomedical engineer, has climbed the corporate ladder over the last 17 years. But guess what? Right now, she's in Baku. She's doing fucking business deals while my kid's stepdad is taking care of my three boys in Katy, Texas, because she travels 50% out of the year. I don't give a shit how much money you make. My second wife ain't fucking traveling unless my ass is there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you can call that selfish. You can call it arrogant. But
or your love language, quality time.
Well, it's not really. My quality time is words of affirmation and physical touch. Those are my one and two.
Okay.
The way that I give is acts of service. But all I'm trying to say is I've gotten to the point in my career where, yes, my lifestyle and my career, because of the force accelerator that what I've built can grow from $12.5 million in revenue to $25 million in revenue over the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. I want a partner that can help me accelerate that growth. What's the probability of her growing her business from $2 million to $14.5 million during that time? It's exponentially harder, right?
Yeah.
And so my point is I've just gotten to the point where a great woman that takes care of me emotionally, takes care of me physically, make sure that I'm in the right frame of mind and I'm in the right mood in order to be at peak performance throughout the day. Oh, dude, that woman can make me fucking elite, right? Because I'm good right now.
Yeah.
But a woman, oh man, I don't give a shit about her $400,000 or $500,000 income, yeah. Right? Yeah. Now, granted, there's a lot of women, like there was a young lady who I was bouncing text messages with last night, who I've gone on a couple dates with, who comes from an affluent family. Right. Dad is very successful in private equity. You know, she lives in a $4.5 million house in West U. It's with her parents, but she's available. I have access to her. Mm-hmm. Is she a gold digger? I don't think so. She just has a level of standards because of the social group that she grew up in. She went to Duchenne. She went to SMU, mm-hmm. Right? She's been around wealthy people in her entire life. And so she expects to live a lifestyle that's congruent with what she's used to. I wouldn't expect her to go back and date a guy that's on the come up, right?
Yeah.
And so you can look at a young lady like that and say, oh, she's just a gold digger. But no, I don't agree. I think that she just has an element of standard and she's not willing to sacrifice that because of what she has access to.
So the way that you're able to vet women is
I'm a recruiter, bro. So I exactly. do candidate profiling.
Exactly. So do you use those same tools to like find talent? Like, is there, right? You know,
well, like I said, man, I have the ability to identify patterns.
Okay.
You know, and I have been wrong before for patterns. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so
how does that work against you?
Oh dude, it can work against you tremendously.
Cause bro. I feel like, you know, I can identify patterns, or really what I can identify yeah. is my patterns. I'm projecting my patterns. Like, I've seen this before.
Yep.
You're going this way, and I end up being wrong. And so I have to kind of like, okay, let me kind of take yep. a step back and see. So
100%. Yeah. I think one of the ways that my ability to identify patterns has failed me is I think one would assume that when you look at a girl's Instagram, if you see a bunch of bikini photos or thirst traps, you think yeah. she's a thought, right? Or sense. Better yet, if you see church and you see, you know, people volunteering in ministries, you think good girl.
Yeah.
Those have both failed me yeah. when making those assumptions
absolutely.
Before. Okay. One of my very best friends, she shall remain nameless. She's 21 years old. Okay. She actually met me because she followed me on social media, and I post my house. I post a couple of my cars all the time. She was running by my house one day and she saw my car in the driveway. My license plate says Fast Ad. And then on my other car, it says ESP CEO. So if you ever see me going down the streets, at me at Jeremy Jensen. But what I'm saying is she called me on Instagram and she said, I think I'm at your house. I said, come back. I want to meet you. Yeah. So I met this girl, beautiful, young, feminine, super fit. She's all sweaty. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great. I'm going to ask her out. Right. And so I asked her out on a nice little pickleball date. She obliged. She was not expecting Steak 48. When we were on the date, we start conversation and she tells me, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. 3 years ago, blah, blah, blah. When I was 18 years old, I said, what the fuck? How old are you? She says, I'm 21. How old did you think I am? I said, I thought you were like 25, 26. She goes, damn, I need a new skincare routine. And then I go, how old do you think I am? She said, I don't know, 34, 35. I said, I'm fucking 40 years old. And so we laugh it off. We played pickleball. She's competitive. It was like her second or third time
That's
playing.
What you like. You like competitive
and
people.
I fucking friend zone this girl. What? Because number one, it's creepy. I'm 40. I don't need to fall in love with a 21-year-old. My age range is 27 to 32. So anyways, but the point that I'm making is she has become one of my very best friends. I talk to her about her career, her education, her fitness, her friendships, her relationship with her family, her relationship with money. I talk to this woman about everything. I'm almost like her life coach. And even though when I look at the Instagram at the bikini photos, because she's proud of what she works hard for, I will tell you, if I had a little motherfucking brother, I would absolutely want this young man to be married with her, right?
Yeah.
If he was accepting of super liberal Gen Z girls, right? But the point that I'm making is I trust, respect, and admire this woman probably almost more than any other woman in my life.
Oh, wow.
And when you look at the Instagram, it wouldn't have been somebody that I even would have entertained for one single date.
How long have you...
Probably about 4 months. 4 months. She's my pickleball friend, man. We play two or three times a week. It's unbelievable. I'm almost like her mentor or her life coach.
Yeah. That's a pretty huge connection for four months.
I love her. She's great.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. But then we went to Sophie the other night, right? She met up with a couple of her friends. All her 23, 24-year-old friends love me. I've got a pretty diverse personality.
Yeah.
And there was a guy there that I was like, bro, you shoot your shot, bro. You're her type. Right.
Yeah.
And then another girl that I was fucking with and she's like, hey, we're going to go somewhere else. Are you good? I was like, I'm good. And so when you have a relationship with a female that you trust, respect, and admire, but more importantly, she trusts, respects, and admire you, and you've never entered anything sexual, then you can actually have a strictly platonic friendship.
Yeah. I have many great
girls. Once you cross the sex boundary, that's whenever it muddies the waters.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. So let me change the subject just a little bit, just to kind of get back on what does the future look like for you? How do you want your personal life to be? Because we're talking about dating. Sure. So I know that you're looking for a family, you know. What does your business look like?
Yep.
Where are we going?
Yeah, so I kind of look at life in 5-year tranches, man. And so, like, you know, what I wanted in my early 20s was probably very different than what I wanted in my late 20s, was different than what I wanted in my early 30s, was different than I wanted in my late 40s, right? And so the way that I approach dating is it's not, can I sit in a rocking chair with this woman whenever I'm 80 years old? I don't know. I think that's a little bit too old school. The way that I view it is what do I want more of in life right now? Okay.
And what is that?
So what I want right now is emotional security, physical intimacy, right? I want a partner that I could have on my arm that looks amazing in a cocktail gown whenever we are going to galas, whenever we're going to private social lounges, somebody that elevates my status because she's regal, she's feminine, she's pure. Right. If it's a girl that half the rich single dudes in Houston have already fucking gone out with on a date, I have absolutely no interest. Right. I want the good girl that's going to elevate me, that I know she's not entertaining dudes in her DMs. She's got two fucking posts from 2016. Right. And she only follows 38 people back. You see what I'm saying? Want the fucking good girl.
You're
dude.
Looking for a diamond. In
We're going to start a nonprofit together. I'm going to invest in her business ideas. I'm going to help her. I'm going to help her pursue her entrepreneurial pursuits because that's my superpower, right?
Yeah.
And she's going to hold me accountable to helping me achieve my fitness goals.
Okay.
Right? My fashion forward ideas, right? She's going to give me the emotional peace to focus on my business and not worry, is she entertaining other dudes?
What would you say is the most understood, most, yeah, what do you, well, look, I can't even get my words right. What do you feel like people don't understand about you? Like when you feel misunderstood, what is it about Jeremy that people just can't comprehend? Or just, you know, you wish they would see that side of you, but they don't get it. Yeah, go ahead.
Man, I think one of the biggest challenges whenever it comes to my personal brand is I'll ask a girl out and they say, why are you interested in me? Mm-hmm. And I'll ask, what do you mean? Why am I interested? You're beautiful. You're feminine. You're all natural. I like your commentary on the shit that you post to your stories. And then they always come back and say, well, you're always surrounded by so many beautiful women. And so they assume, I think that people assume that I'm sleeping with them if I'm around them. And I don't know why that's the case.
Probably because of the money and maybe power and influence.
I think that the reason why I have so many platonic female friends is because I don't try to sleep with them.
Yeah.
Right? If I was being creepy, if I was being weird, then why the fuck would they want to hang out with that guy, right? Yeah. And these are my friends. These are my friends that give me love, respect, and admiration in the way that I need to receive it, right? It's right here in my emotional aspect, right? Yeah. There's no shortage of girls to hook up with. Especially the ones that I want to be around are the girls that treat me right.
Yeah.
100% treat me
right.
So
let me ask you a question. I had this problem in my dating life. Have you ever come across a girl and she feels a little insecure that you have so many female friends and probably accuses you of cheating or, you know, any infidelity? Well, infidelity and cheating.
Sure.
But yeah, have you had any of those problems? Because I remember I had those problems. And I remember one girl, she was just like, I can't deal with this. Like, you have to drop your friends.
Yeah.
I mean, even like I have a friend, right? And he has a wife. I have a godson and she didn't like me being friends with her. I'm like, that's my godson's mother. What are you talking about? And also I have a podcast.
Yeah.
You expect me to just not have any females here
or
any women here? Excuse me. So have you ever come across anything like that?
Yeah. So I'll say that I'm probably the perfect boyfriend because, well, number one, you already fucking know what you're getting into, right? Because there's an element of like publicity that's associated with my name. But number two, I've only had one serious long-term committed relationship since my divorce with someone that I specifically thought was a wife candidate person.
How long were you all together for?
We were only together for 4 months, actually.
Wow.
We went ring shopping, traveling together, right? Yeah. It was a big deal. I was under contract on a new house that we were actually going to buy together. And I saw her every single day, right? And it's because I do have an anxious attachment style. I potentially do have codependency issues. And so if I'm in love with someone, I'm not trying to fucking play games. I'm not trying to leave you on red. I'll fucking share my location. I'll tell you exactly what I'm doing, where I'm going, who I'm going with. And better yet, you're fucking invited.
Yeah.
I don't care if it is with one of my female friends. I ain't trying to hide shit from no one, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why people do kind of resonate with me is, you know exactly where I stand. I don't need to mislead anyone in order to get what I want. Because if you just are truly 100% open, honest, and authentic, there's enough fucking people in the world that will fuck with you, right?
Yeah.
When you start lying, when you start concealing the truth, when you start manipulating or gaslighting, that's whenever it creates this big pile of shit to cover up, right? But if you just tell the truth, then a woman can process her own emotions. Who'd you have lunch with today? Right? Oh, I took Jacqueline to lunch. Where did y'all go? Right? Oh, we went to West Elm, right? Or not West Elm, White Elm, right? And so it's important to introduce your partner to all these people as well, right? And it's also important to start posting your partner very early on in a committed relationship because she should know that you're proud to say this is my woman as well.
So you leave yourself very open. How do you protect yourself? Because some people are going to see you as a huge target. Very successful, good-looking man.
Oh, good-looking? I'll take that. I don't hear that very often.
I'm very comfortable with my sexuality. You know, yeah. Just, you know, you're...
How do I protect myself?
Yeah, you know, you're a huge bachelor, you know? You have a lot going on for yourself. It seems like you're a very, you know, good-hearted person. People take advantage of that. So how do you protect it?
I would say that it hasn't become an issue yet.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's very important to interpret the words that people use, right? So, like, there was a girl that slid in my DMs last week. She said, oh, you're at Toka. When are you going to take me? Right? I'm leaving her on red.
Yeah.
I don't care how beautiful you are.
I like your boundaries.
Right?
Yeah.
If someone... I don't know. I guess I just do a good job at like putting people in buckets and saying that's a user or that's somebody that actually vibes with me. Mm-hmm. Right. I think you can also tell a lot by what type of content somebody engages on that you produce. Right. And so like I look at the shit that I put out. I'm a dad. Mm-hmm. I have three young sons. Right. So I post my kids.
Yeah.
I notice the girls that double tap the photos of my kids.
Yeah.
Right. I notice the girls that double tap the photos of the houses and the cars or the restaurants. Right. Mm-hmm. I notice the girls that follow my podcast page and follow the content and the short form shorts that is produced by the content. And so it's very easy to figure out what they resonate with. And so I guess the way that I've done a good job of keeping the takers out is by compartmentalizing the girls that maybe only double tap Steak 48.
So you got to be careful. I'm going to challenge you on that, right? You know how probably, what was that, 20 years ago, they had that Catfish TV show?
Okay.
In 2024, social media is catfish.
So you're saying they can manufacture a false reality that they like me as being a dad, even though they still only want to take the cars and the watches and the clout.
Or even what they portray.
Okay.
You know, you use social media as a tool to showcase and, you know, showcase more of who you are. Mm-hmm. Everybody doesn't use it that way.
That's a good point.
Everybody has a mask. I see and, you know, I'm just sharing my story. In my dating life, one of the things I have made a mistake in is falling for somebody for the social media page.
Ooh.
And that has led me down the wrong path because as we date more, I'm expecting this person.
Yep.
And you show up as someone else and it's like, wait, that's not you. Wait,
yeah.
You posted this happy stuff and all this. And now you show up as this person. Like, wait, I got catfished.
Yeah.
That's not you.
Yeah.
And so that's my story. I don't want to.
No. I wholeheartedly understand. And my ex-girlfriend, she called me out. She goes, Jeremy, I don't even think that you really love me. She said, I think that you love the idea.
Yes.
Of me, because we create this like magical, just like little girls, you know, whenever their children create this magical image of what their wedding is going to be like, we create this magical image of what this woman's going to be like in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And when the bar is set so high in the beginning, it becomes an impossible character for them to evolve into.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why sometimes it, you know, you have to be careful of having that anxious attachment because it's just, you can be disappointed. So my whole thing, when it comes to dating, I learned to kind of take my time. I learned to put these women in different environments. Okay. So, you know, that they're going to show up. So you want to kind of see every aspect.
Yeah.
They're going to be different around certain friends. They're going to be different around certain music. You know, there's certain things that, you know, will bring women out, or really not just women, just people out.
Yeah.
So that's why I say, I was like, you know what, just
that's a great
pause
point.
The social media, because it can lead you down the wrong path.
100%.
Especially here in Houston, right? You know, a Slim Thug says, Houston is the home of the player of the pimps. You know, a lot of these people are portraying something, and everything that glitters isn't gold. There's a lot of fool's gold out here.
100%.
So you have to take your time. But yeah, I appreciate this dating talk. I didn't have this plan.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate it. I did want to kind of give more. But you know what? Let me ask you this real quick. Just kind of give probably like little 2 to 5 minutes of just kind of business things and, you know, to help people thrive or anything of that nature. So what does it take to really just build a respectable brand? Because one of the things that you did, right, of your self-awareness is, you can correct me on the date. I think in 2015, you changed the name of your business.
Yep.
I have that. The same. Okay. Yeah. So how did you know that it's like, hey, I need to switch this? And also you were right because it also brought your business up. So how are you able to identify that?
Well, the reason why I changed it is my first business was an email marketing and lead generation business. Mm-hmm. Then we evolved into a recruiting company. And when oil plummeted from $128 a barrel to $63 a barrel in the course of 60 days in late 2014, there was no more commerce being done in the city of Houston. So I had to diversify nationwide, right? And I struggled with coming up with the courage to walk away from the brand equity and the $1 million in revenue a year that I had already created. But I did decide to change the name because I didn't want anything to get lost in translation, right?
Yeah.
And so I changed the name from Market Share Solutions to Encore Search Partners. And when you hear Encore Search Partners, you think search. Are y'all in recruiting? Are you in search engine optimization? Mm-hmm. But at least you have search there, right?
Yeah.
And so we saw our engagement rate go from about 1% back to about 5% during that period of time. And so I think the way that it applies to brand in the context of what you're asking is sometimes we do change our mind of what we want, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, just because you've always worn, you know, a gold chain and had a thick ass beard and wore a medium sized shirt, right?
Not a
if you want to change, I'm fucking with you. If you want to change the demographic of what you attract, you have the ability to change your own personal brand, right? And so, you know, one of the epiphanies that I've personally come to, you know, specifically in the last 30 days, as I've gotten a little bit closer to wanting a serious, good girl, long-term partner, potential wife in my life, is I love the fact that my ex-wife is a devout Baptist Christian. Okay. She goes to church 3 times a week and my kids go to church 2 times a week, right? And they are heavily involved in the church. And I love that they are grounded in their faith. It makes them stronger men of character and integrity. And I don't have to worry about dad saying no, 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 because they believe in a higher power of accountability, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started wearing this bracelet right here, WWJD, just as a kind of a reminder of myself of what I want a little bit more of in life, right? And so this is a way that I'm potentially starting to change my brand, right? Okay. And the narrative that I'm creating in the market, because it's something that I'm wanting to gravitate a little bit more towards. But you have to make a conscious effort of showing up and actually being the person that you say that you are.
Yeah.
Right. I can't just say, hey, I want a girl that lives an active lifestyle because I want her to be fit and hot. Guess what? I have to start living an active lifestyle. Right.
Absolutely.
I can't just say I want a woman that has strong Christian values and it's all good. I'm rich. I can provide for her. Mm-hmm. Guess what? I need to live strong Christian values. And so that's a great way of me sharing with your audience that you don't need to continue showing up as whatever brand that the market perceives you at, that you do have the ability to recreate the narrative, but you can't do it with your words. You have to do it with your actions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe that's something that, you know, one of your favorite artists, Post Malone, did. You know, I think he really changed. I'm not going to lie, you know, don't hate me for saying this or Post Malone, but White Iverson.
100%.
Coming from White Iverson, I thought it was just a one-hit wonder. You know, I've seen that with a couple artists.
Yep.
And for him to be so global, I'm just so amazed by that, you know, and so inspired by that. Because it's like, wow, like, you know, I may think I'm right a lot of times. Yep. And I'm like, this guy's going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I did like White Iverson. But he's just such a complete evolved person.
100%.
And just musically just so talented.
Yeah.
And, And I love seeing stories like that. So yeah, I hear exactly where you're coming from. Well, how can people find you?
So the best place to find me, there's two spots. If you want to do business, I'm on LinkedIn, Jeremy Jensen, J-E-N-S-O-N. There's a little goat emoji next to my name. That's my nickname, my moniker in my industry. And then if you want anything social, anything dating, anything, anything related to experiences, hit me up on Instagram. I've got a big social following there. I throw a lot of parties in the city of Houston. Yeah. And I really like that the more people that know me, the more people will trust, respect, and admire me. And when you can create influencers in the community that actually say, hey, this person is who he says he is, that's a force multiplier for you and your own personal brand. So hit me up on Instagram at Jeremy Jensen with a little blue check.
Jeremy, I really appreciate you coming.
Awesome,
man. I really appreciate it. It was just an unexpected gift, and I am eternally grateful.
Awesome.
I know my audience enjoyed you as well. So, yeah, thank you very much for coming to Room 1710, right?
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you, brother.
All right. And we will talk to y'all later. See you.